Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
As Massachusetts looks toward at least the beginning of a reopening next week, questions remain about what our new normal is going to look like. Some of the biggest are around childcare, especially as schools remain closed for the rest of the academic year and non-emergency childcare remains closed until June 29th. Let's tackle that question today. How and when childcare reopens? Parents, families, how are you thinking about it? How are you thinking about childcare for you going forward? Can you work without it? Are you worried about sending your kids back to a daycare for health and safety reasons? If you're a childcare provider, how have these past couple months been for you? And will you be able to get back up and running? Call us with your thoughts, your stories, your worries. You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Now, joining us to help with this conversation is Amy O'Leary, director of the Early Education for All campaign at Strategies for Children, which is an advocacy and policy organization that works to ensure that Massachusetts invests resources for all children. Amy, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me today.
So, Amy, non-emergency childcare has been closed in the Commonwealth since March 23rd. How have things been going for providers and families since then? That's a long time.
That is a long time. And I think first what I want to acknowledge is that Massachusetts, the governor, working alongside with the commissioner of early education and care, closed childcare. Many states never made the choice to close childcare. So with closing childcare and then opening in emergency sites, we are seeing an opportunity as we think about reopening, about what it looks like to reopen stronger than we were before. We know that families are having an experience from working remotely with young children around, their school-age children around. We also know that programs are working so hard to think about how they stay connected to families while dealing with the many financial realities that are stressing them out and keeping them up at night about what this could look like in the future.
So we do know that we're expecting some kind of staggered or phased reopening, but this is an interesting staggering because businesses, some of them that have been closed so far, could be opening as early as sometime next week. But childcare, writ large, isn't scheduled to resume until June 29th. And it's not clear how the emergency childcare operations that are open now will serve people in the interim. And schools are closed for the rest of the year. We know that matters for people going to work. How's this going to work?
We sent a letter to the governor's reopening advisory board talking about, we had 38 organizations sign on from PNC Bank and the Mass Business Roundtable to the Boston Foundation and MIRA, the Mass Immigrant and Refugee Advocacy Coalition, and many early education programs. And our basic message was that there's no way that we can reboost or restart our economy if employees and families don't have access to safe, affordable, high quality childcare. Strategies for Children did a parent survey. We launched it on April 20th. And as of May 1st, we had really interesting results to see. We know that parents are working remotely. We know that parents are relying on information from their childcare providers about when they're going to reopen. We know that folks are very concerned about health and safety, the cleaning that may well have to happen. If there's reduced ratios, who is going to decide who gets to be in programs? And we also know that families are really thinking about health concerns as they think about going back into a program, both for their children and their families. We have learned lessons from the emergency childcare programs. So when, having the social distancing rules in effect, we're still seeing families that have been impacted or testing positive, programs having to close for 2 weeks and then maybe reopening. So this cycle, I think what you mentioned about this is going to be a staggered approach. It's not going to be a light switch. There's also a real financial challenge right now. If you think about reducing the number of children in a program, many of our financial models are based on full enrollment, and we know that's not going to be possible. So there's a lot of fear and anxiety about how providers will think about, supporting the children, supporting the families, and making it economically. There have been estimations nationally about all the numbers of programs that we're going to close.
parents and families, how about you? Can you sustain work over the long term without bringing your children to childcare? Are you working now and need childcare now? Are you concerned about health and safety when you go back to work or when you bring your children back to childcare? Or has this whole thing changed your calculus on who stays home, who works, and who cares for the children? Call us 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Amy, we talk a lot about the logistics of childcare, the need for working families for childcare. But as with primary school education, we also know that childcare serves really important roles in terms of social emotional development, gross motor skills, other things that are important for kids. What are families losing when children don't have that supplemental support in childcare?
It's interesting that you raise that because I would say that's what we're hearing more of most recently. We know that any survey or any interview with parents, it's evolving, right? As new realities are setting in, I think what they're thinking is changing daily, sometimes hourly and by the minute. We're hearing anecdotally this week that more people are hearing from their employers about potential that they're going to be working from home. And I think that's why we're hearing, you know, for a longer period of time. And I think that reality and thinking about how do you provide adequate socialization, which we know is so important in the early years. How do you make sure your children are meeting these developmental milestones? We know how quickly the brain is developing during this time. But we also know that this is an equity issue. And, you know, people who have to go back to work who aren't going to have many choices, whether it's shift work or thinking of, you know, they're going to have to take the hours they can get. How are employers really working with their employees to better understand what they want and need? We've often talked about the issue of scheduling and having stable schedules. You know, one recommendation we've been thinking about is parents of young children who have to go back to work, they should be first in line in getting schedules that connect to a stable schedule for their early education and care program. But I think the social we're grappling with this as adults. Oh, go ahead.
No, just go ahead and finish that thought and then I want to bring another voice in.
Sure. I was just going to say that as adults, we are grappling with this social and emotional challenge of being socially distant. And I think we're hearing from families on one hand about how resilient they are, but then as a New York Times headline for the editorial this week said, we're sick of asking kids to be resilient. So how do we have that balance and how do we make sure that families are getting the support that they need to support their young children?
So I want to bring another provider voice in. Amy, stay there, please. We have with us Sandy Emery, who runs Sandy's Tiny Tykes in Haverhill. Welcome to Radio Boston, Sandy.
Thank you.
So Sandy, under normal circumstances, give us an idea of your business. How many children do you take care of?
I have a capacity of 6. I generally have 4 to 5 in my daycare on a daily basis. We start up first thing at 6:30 in the morning. I have people driving in and I have children leaving between 4:30 and 5 o'clock at night.
And how have the past couple months been for you?
Very quiet. We've been shut down since March 23rd, of course, as you know, and it's been very quiet, very nerve-wracking. I would definitely have to agree with the anxiety because we just don't know what it's going to look like come June 29th. If we reopen, there's potential there that might be extended. It possibly could, or we might even lose families. So just the fear of whether or not we're going to be opening up as business as usual, the new standard, because what we were 3 months ago, 4 months ago, is not what it's going to look like when we open up on June 29th or the beginning of July. So things are going to have to change.
Sandy,
so,
mm-hmm. Do you have any sense of what you think it might look like? Any sense in your networks of what the requirements might be?
So there's a lot of chitter chatter, and I know that the EEC, the early education and care folks, are putting together what that model is definitely going to look like. They're still working on that. But from what we're hearing, it sounds like our capacity might change. So where I can have 6, I might only be able to have 4. It really depends on what your layout is and your square footage is. And what is it going to look like when these children come in the morning? Well, I can tell you the parents are not going to be coming in the home. They're going to drop outside for sure. Before they used to come in, they might be able to talk. My other children would go up to the other family members and say hello, because as an in-home family daycare, family is the key. We were like a gigantic family here. And that's going to have to slow down because we're going to have to put that barrier to make sure everybody is safe because there's so much we don't know right now.
So, Sandy, let's have you stay on the line. I'm going to bring Amy O'Leary back on to Director of Early Education for All campaign. And I want to take a call now. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got Jen on the line from Holliston. Hi, Jen. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I have three young children. This is an issue that's obviously very relevant to me personally and my family. And I am far more concerned about the long-term impacts of my child not returning to her daycare center than I am, honestly, about health and safety concerns. I know that our center will do everything they need to do to clean and keep children safe, and I am far more concerned about the lack of social interaction, the lack of preparation for kindergarten that my daughter is currently missing because she is home with a family where the adults are trying to work and the older kids are trying to do schoolwork, and it's very, very difficult. So I would be all for opening as soon as possible.
So Sandy, Amy, is that what you're hearing from other families? Thank you, Jen, for the call. Is that what you're hearing from other families? Are you hearing those same themes that we're hearing from Jen?
I am. With my daycare, every one of my families that I currently have that are going to be coming back are stating that they're ready to go right now. If I said tomorrow the doors are opening up, XYZ is the rules, they said they would all meet by the rules, whatever they would be, just so that way they could have that social interaction, because Jen's absolutely correct. Those children get to know each other, they get to play, and children learn from one another because they're down on their level. You know, us adults can get down on their level, but the little ones, they learn to walk from one another. It's like having an older brother. They teach one another. And so them missing out on that is very, you know, it could have long-term effects, like when they go off to kindergarten or preschool or somewhere else down the road. It's so much better for their social skills.
Yeah.
Sandy, Emery. Yeah, go ahead, Amy. Go.
I would agree. No, go. I would agree, and I would also say I think it changes. Like many of us are going through this cycle of like, I think everything is going to be okay, to oh my God, nothing's ever going to be the same again. Mm-hmm. And I think what we're also hearing from the programs is the anxiety and liability, and what if someone gets sick and they're in my program, and what if I'm following behind a child and sanitizing the best I can. You know, just how do you support an early education and care workforce that already was undervalued and undercompensated? Mm-hmm. And we know that parents cannot fill in the gap that might happen if we have lower ratios or lower class sizes. So we are going to need public dollars to help solve this problem, and we're going to have to spend them in a different way. Our model has been about, you know, per child, per day in attendance, and we're going to have to revamp and rethink a lot of that. I think the best partnership between parents and providers right now, and keeping those lines of communication and being able to be frustrated together, are so critical.
So, Amy, I'm going to ask you to continue to stay right there, please. Sandy Emery, who runs Sandy's Tiny Tots. I'm so sorry. I cannot say that today. It is Sandy's Tiny Tykes. It's a lovely name. I'm sorry, Sandy. In Haverhill, I appreciate you joining us today. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Okay, and I do want to bring in one other voice on this. This is Emma LaVecchia, who is one of the co-founders of Pine Village Preschools, which operates 10 locations throughout the greater Boston area. Welcome, Emma.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, Emma, let me ask you quickly, how many families do you serve across those 10 locations, or did you before the shutdown?
We served about 475 families with about 500 children.
And how many employees?
About 125. Including admin staff. So we have about 115 school dedicated teachers and directors.
And what have been the financial implications for you and your employees? Did you receive financial assistance? Have you been able to continue to pay them?
So when we actually shut down on March 13th was our last day We continued to pay staff for the month of March, with the original understanding that we were only going to be closed for 2 weeks, and obviously that changed over those 2 weeks. We are very grateful that we received PPP funds. It's sort of our lifeline right now. We, after those 2 weeks, made the very difficult decision to furlough all of our staff, and they are still currently furloughed. When we found out that we were not going to be allowed to open until June 29th and sort of looked at the implications of using the PPP funds completely before we were even allowed to open and resume, you know, work and receiving revenue, it just wasn't a responsible way to use those funds. So we do have a very limited staff now, kind of online doing some admin work in finance and enrollment, but all of our school staff are furloughed.
And I do just want to note the PPP is the Payroll Protection Program, which was part of the Federal CARES Act. One other question for you, Emma, are you confident? What level of confidence do you have? That might be a better way to ask the question, that your business and your staff are going to be able to come back after this, and that your families will bring their children back too.
So it's sort of this, like a cycle, and all of these things kind of have to work out and have to come together for us to be able to resume as we were before. And we won't resume as we were before, but I'm very confident that Pine Village will be able to open up when we're allowed to. We are going to look very different. We've already begun surveying our families to find out what their intentions are for summer and for the fall. And everything that Amy and Sandy have said is completely true. Parents have, you know, they sort of fall into three buckets. Some families are concerned with the health and safety and really want to stay home until they feel more confident. Some are just unsure, and some can't wait to come back. And the minute that we're open, they're going to bring their kids. We're kind of looking at the summer as a soft opening with a limited number of kids and a limited number of staff, depending on how many children come back, and really just trying to meet the needs of what our families are looking for.
I want to bring Amy back.
Go ahead. Sorry.
If you don't mind, Emma, we've got a couple of minutes left, and there are a few other subjects I want to get to. I want to bring Amy back into the conversation, and I want to talk to both of you. We talked about PPP, which is the Payroll Protection Program, but there is another issue, and it relates back to the developmental conversation we were having before, mm-hmm. which is PPE, personal protective equipment. The fact that children over the age of 2, I'm assuming will be required to wear that in childcare. The staff will be required to wear that. I've talked to a lot of families. My children are older, but I've talked to a lot of families with younger children who talk about the fact that the PPE scares their kids and creates this sense of barrier. How do we think about something like PPE and social distancing requirements in the act of providing a nurturing childcare environment? Amy, I think I'll start with you, and then I'll go back over to Emma.
Sure. As I have been thinking, you know, before I was a full-time advocate, I was a preschool teacher and director for 10 years, and which is why my heart is with the people who are trying to help think about, you know, to run programs. I think that we're going to have to rely on the innovation and the creativity and just the can-do attitude of early educators and school-age providers, because I think, like anything else, they're going to have to think about ways to teach this, ways to make it fun, ways that people understand the rules. It's the same way that we think about learning how to share, standing in line, all the kind of executive function pieces that we talk about when we think about high quality early ed. It's going to be the same conversations. And I think they're going to rely on partnership with families. And they're going to, you know, we often have to explain things to children that we don't understand as adults. So I believe that there will be an adjustment. And I think there'll be kind of peaks and valleys and highs and lows of how it's going. But I think, you know, we will be in a new reality. And I think that we'll, you know, early educators will find a way.
Emma, what's your reaction to that?
Yeah, I totally agree. And we've actually been spending the last month talking about the transition back to school and how to support our families and the kids emotionally when they come back, because they've been through a trauma, you know, staying at home, isolated at home, being dragged out of their regular everyday routine is really traumatizing. And coming back to a school environment all together, which is going to be completely unfamiliar, is going to be traumatizing. So we've already started discussing things like having tags with the, all of our teachers are going to be very familiar to the kids, but having pictures like name tags for each teacher with their full face on it so that kids can see their faces even though they're covered up. Doing some Zoom calls with the kids, with the teachers already having masks on so they get used to seeing them in masks. We've talked about fun ways for kids to decorate their own masks, maybe using superhero hats and you know, incorporating the masks with them. So, you know, everything is going to be very different. And I think it is our top priority of all early educators to make this transition smooth and support these kids emotionally when they come back to school. Because as much as September is a big transition for this for kids, this returning is going to be a big one. And none of us have gone through it before. You know, we're, as we say 100 times, we're building the airplane as we're flying. So we're going on our instinct and trusting what's right and what we know is most important for the kids.
That's Emma LaVecchia, one of the co-founders of Pine Village Preschools, which operates 10 locations throughout Greater Boston. Thank you, Emma.
Thank you.
And Amy O'Leary, director of the Early Education for All campaign at Strategies for Children, which is a policy and organizing organization. Amy, thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much, and thanks for covering this important issue.